Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us for yet another great show of the Soca Undressed Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Cece Cole. I'd like to thank you for joining us on today, Thursday, August 12th, and where we are already smack dead in the middle of the year. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Soca Undressed Talk Radio Show is a spinoff on our Soca Undressed Talk, Soca Undressed Magazine. Soca Undressed is not just your ordinary magazine. We are extraordinary. Soca Undressed spotlight, inspire, and motivate women to follow their dreams, utilizing the conduit of stories of successful executives. Soca Undressed focuses on the lifestyle of the lady CEO. As an international professional women's magazine, we connect women globally for empowerment, market culture, education, leadership styles. We exchange ideas and success strategies. We praise the accomplishments of women. We celebrate women, and we embrace diversity and multiculturalism. Soca Undressed stories stimulate entrepreneurship, breakthrough growth opportunities, and inspire dreams. We encourage the inner voice of women to say, "I can do all things." And most importantly, we share the juice of wisdoms and mantras of presidents, prime ministers, and Fortune 500 executives, because once a woman's dream is realized, the world changes. Today we'll be kicking off our Women in Politics. It's the year of the Republican woman, and today we have some extraordinary women that will be joining us. One woman is someone that I grew a lot of respect for over the past, I would say, five to seven months. Someone that has really blossomed right before my eyes to come out to being a woman of integrity. Integrity is very important to me. I think an integrous leader is someone that can do really great things. And just in order to be successful in business, whether you work for a nonprofit or a profit organization, and whether you're in a public or the private sector, as a leader, integrity is one of the most important assets that you can ever have. And in fact, I'll also go out to saying that it's the most important leadership trait you can actually have. And I come to know and I come to really grow a lot of respect and admiration for Karen Debo. Karen Debo currently sits on a board in Winter Park as a vice mayor and commissioner. Karen Debo has done some fantastic things in the city of Winter Park. She brings solutions-oriented government solutions to the city of Winter Park, whether it's expanding regional mobility or curtailing government waste. Karen did a lot in terms of improving emergency response and the preserving environmentally sensitive wetlands in the area. She's definitely made a great impact in the area. She made a positive difference. As she goes forth in her campaign trail to be the next congresswoman from the 24th District of Florida, Karen is really doing some amazing things in the community and making people know exactly who she is. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and bring Karen on. We're going to talk to her a little bit, get to know her a little bit, so you can also discover what I found here, treasure in the middle of Central Florida. Karen, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for that introduction. I'm honored to have you say those words about me.
Oh, you're quite welcome. They're quite true. I'm a woman of integrity myself, and I've watched you, Karen. I've become really amazed with your campaign. It's such a professional campaign. It's polished. It's decent. And you know what? I keep telling you that you look so presidential. I have really high hopes for you.
Thank you very much. I am looking forward to speaking with you today, and very much like to represent District 24 in Congress, so I appreciate those words as well.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Well, Karen, let's go ahead and let's get people to know a little bit more about you. Won't you tell us a little bit about yourself, and then I want to talk about some of your platforms, some of the things that you stand on in terms of your issues, which are very important for District 24.
Sure, you bet. It's, first and foremost, I'm a mother of three sons, and as you stated, just finished my term on the Winter Park City Commission, where I served as vice mayor. And also, professionally, I'm a businesswoman. I am an executive and officer with Verizon, where I work in a global business unit. And as a professional, working mom, has been able to enjoy my service in the community, where during my term we lowered taxes, we lowered spending, we decreased the size of government and increased services, and also decreased the debt. So my background is in finance, and professionally with my company have responsibility in a unit where we solve for the most complex business and technology problems, primarily in the Fortune 100. And we put tools in employees' hands so they can do their jobs better, take cost out, and use that to hire more people to do higher level work, and have a specialty in creating jobs around the nation.
No, wonderful. Now, Karen, you have some really great issues that you're campaigning for, and one of them that's very dear and near to my heart is preserving family values. I understand that you're a single mother now. You have three sons. Let's talk about how do we protect what's really important to America, and that's traditional family values. How do we protect that?
Absolutely, and as you said, I'm a widow, first and foremost. My late husband was a physician in the community. He died very tragically 8 years ago, so I found myself as the only parent left, and with a 5'3" and 2-year-old, and they are the light of my life, of course. And now they're 14, 12, and 10. And when I think about the sanctity of life and preserving family values and just being a mom, is I believe in not only living your values and your principles and so forth, but have strongly had to provide for my family, as most people out in the certainly in life need to do. And you can't have a strong family if you can't provide for your family. And jobs are so important here, and at the topic of our discussion, and then also making sure that as you're living service, and I've been very fortunate to be able to include my sons in the community work that I've been able to do, because I do think it's important for our young people to be to know service is to live service, and the opportunity both to serve the constituents here in District 24 is. Again, I think it all starts with strong family and faith at home.
Absolutely, absolutely. I definitely agree with you. And thank you very much for mentioning all those things, because it really is important. As a single parent myself, I know how important that is. I'm raising two boys in the heart of New York City. So that is very, very important. And today I'm really proud to announce that they're great young men carrying on the same values that we've instilled in them over the years. So that is definitely very important. Let's talk about the environment in which we live. I know right now that I'm in a state of Florida. We have tons of natural resources right here. How do we go about really conserving our natural resources that won't put our jobs and our textiles at risk? What is the most effective way to handle that situation, Karen?
Well, there's lots of opportunities to do that. Something that was personal to me, and I started some work in our community, is that I championed a project. It's now known as the Howell Branch Preserve, but it took about 7 years to get it done, and I was honored as being Conservationist of the Year by the Orange County Medical Society and the Rotary back in 2005. And what we did is, I'll describe the project in a minute, but my job was to find the money. I'm a financial person. My background is in finance, and it's part of the skill that I would like to serve with for our District 24 and getting after these budgets at the federal level. But what we did in conserving our environment is we had a project where We had a big tract of land that was not cared for. It was right in the middle of our water system where water collection and wetlands happened and where it filters down into our drinking water and eventually into the aquifer. And we assembled a bunch of support and neighbors and some private money to be able to restore the land, get the water systems opened up a little bit, the cleanliness was improved and so forth, and it all came together with coordination, mostly with girlfriends of mine who stepped up and took a part and a role and used their own expertise in bringing a project together. And the result of conservation, of course, is it impacts everybody for the good. And when I think about contributing to the solutions on a national scale or even for the state of Florida in particular, is we've got to be able to not only preserve our resources but use them for things like energy independence and use them in a very safe way so that we respect our environment at the same time that we are using our natural resources to support us.
Oh, awesome. That sounds really great. And so is that an ongoing thing that you have right now? Was it a one-time project, or is it ongoing?
It was a one-time project. It's a really it's a neat project that was completed about a year ago. And what happened at the end is we preserved most of it and turned it into a park. And for those parts of it that just needed to be protected, we did that. And it is a great situation now for all residents to enjoy. And at the same time, it really improved things throughout our lake systems and our aquifers and the things that were in the heart of our city.
Okay, awesome. That is amazing. Thank you very much for that. I love nature, and I like to see natural beauty, and I just think that it's awesome. And it's one of the things I say about Florida. You know, I'm from New York City, and it's concrete jungle there in New York City. And it has all the other elements that I like. And when I come to Florida, I'm thinking, oh, my God, what a beautiful sight to see. It's just absolutely incredible. Florida is the most beautiful state that I've ever visited. It really is.
Absolutely.
Really,
and you know, we had a little bit of an interesting opening after all the work was done. And, again, my contribution to it was to structure how are we going to buy the land? How are we going to raise private money? How are we going to get the support on board to be able to do this? And the park was actually christened and opened during Hurricane Fay, the Saturday after we had that big tropical storm and so forth that sat over Central Florida. And we cut the ribbon on the Saturday right after the park or the storm had blown through, and the water systems had risen so much that the streams throwing through there was a raging river at that point. And it performed exactly like it was designed to capture all the water,
awesome.
Let it filtrate down. The fish were swimming in the park, and it really, really was a testament to what we actually got done as a community.
Wow, that's amazing. Sounds beautiful. I have a big smile on my face. It just looks beautiful just by hearing about it. So that's really great. Thank you very much for that wonderful contribution to the city and Winter Park. Is that correct?
Correct.
It was in
right
Park.
At the border,
okay,
of Winter Park and Maitland, yes.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. So now let's talk about the economy in which we live. Right now, you know, we're looking at the jobs, we're looking at the housing market, we're looking at healthcare. There's so many things that surround us. And as a congresswoman, you go, and right now there's huge challenges that we all face. Your responsibility as a leader is to help fight for the District of 24. When you're up on that hill, what's going to be your priority? We have jobs, we have housing, and we have businesses, and we have just people, you know, everyday life. What's priority, and how do we create jobs, first of all, for District 24, and how do we cut spending, lower taxes? How do we put all of that together? How do we make it work, an effective government?
Those are exactly the topics. Is a economic security. We first and foremost, let's kind of talk about what the issues are. Is that we need to stop the spending. In other words, I would call for as priorities a balanced budget. And again, my expertise and why I would like to serve everybody here in District 24 in Washington is because I do believe that you can take financial and business skills to government and create efficiency and lower the taxes and lower the spending and increase the services and decrease the debt. And that's the fiscal discipline that I would like to take to Washington, be a very strong voice for us here in District 24. And so there are priorities. We need to get this economic situation righted. We have a huge unemployment risk here in our community. We have 23,000 people who are going to lose their jobs in potentially the next 13 months that are associated with our space program. And we potentially have the largest job loss in the country across all congressional districts. And I work in technology and computing and communications and so forth, and I understand how to have the discussions with the employers in our nation to bring jobs here to Central Florida and to District 24, specifically in the science, technology, engineering, math, the future of what our children and our country have always built a strong base on. So when I think about what are the priorities, first and foremost, we need a balanced budget. I would call for that. We also need, and it is an interesting and almost indescribable thing that this current Congress is not going to do a budget. We have a $1.47 trillion deficit, and they're not doing a budget. Hmm. You and I need to do one at home. We certainly, and I'm sure all families across our community look after their own budgets at home, and we should expect our federal government to do the same. We have to repeal this health care bill. This is dangerous legislation, and it's a job-killing bill. And to get kind of specific with an example, my employer is Verizon, like I said. We're one of the larger employers in the country. And just by way of why this needs to be repealed is my company insures over 900,000 lives in America. And these are retirees, current employees, children, dependents, and this health care bill will cost my company over $1.4 billion in the first year in just additional corporate taxes and so forth. But even if money was not an issue, it will force us to transition and dump 73,000 seniors into the Medicare system. And that creates a huge problem. And Caterpillar came out, and John Deere came out, and IBM came out, and some of our just strong American employers and said, "Don't do this. It is causing a situation where it'll increase costs and lower medical outcomes, and then we won't have physicians here in Florida in our community that can even see new patients in the Medicare system." Is that it creates a huge burden for not only everybody, but in particular for seniors. And in memoriam of my late husband, we started a family foundation. It's called the Good Samaritan Fund. And the concept of it is helping one person at one time when they need the help. And our project that is the main project out of the foundation is we have a health clinic for uninsured. It's in East Orange County. It's called the Diebel Memorial Clinic. It's faith-based. And we had the goal and the vision to raise private money to serve a public challenge. And we serve about 2,000 patients a year and have a prescription program and outreach to the hospital systems and so forth. And it's a great model. And I understand the economics of medicine. And we talked a little bit about my background in finance and so forth. I know that there are private solutions to public challenges because I was involved in one, and it works beautifully. We have more to do, but we can't afford this health care bill to continue on and become active and so forth because it really does have unintended consequences and really, really stresses the system, especially our seniors in our community.
And we have to protect seniors and children. Somehow they're always, I don't know, they tend to be the target. Don't you agree? They tend to be the target.
They are.
Education and seniors.
Absolutely, and you know, as a working person and a working parent, and you as well, and many families and people, is that the whole idea with this health care bill was to raise medical outcomes and take cost out of the system. And as your member and representative in Congress, I would like to contribute to the solution in that. And first thing we need to do is not appropriate this bill and take a very conservative approach, and then peel it back and really put some health care legislation in place that truly decreases costs, provides more access to medicine for people at the cost that a physician could bear in a practice, and make sure that we have access across our community, but across America, for the things that we need to get done.
Awesome. That's amazing. Now, we live in Florida, and when I moved here, one of the things I wanted to do was always see the shuttle take off. And I remember one day driving down I-4, and I have a phone call that said, park quickly, turn around, and go here. You want to see the shuttle? Now is your time. It was awesome. Now I know that there is a fight for NASA. What would you do to help bridge the funding gap that we have for NASA's budget?
Well, and it's important, and it is a priority of mine, especially for lots of reasons, but let's kind of talk about why we need to protect the space program. Space is the ultimate high ground, and meaning that supremacy in space and what we learn from studying in space, human space flight, humans' study in space has given us so many advantages in our daily life, and we enjoy things like DirecTV and satellite radio and things of that nature. But where it's really important is it's a national security interest. It's a resource and an asset for America, and many of the advantages that we have in our military come directly from the science that has been studied and developed in space. And our GPS systems, and our telemetry in medicine, the ability to have the high quality MRIs and CT scans and all those kind of things that are important to everybody's daily life. I don't believe in outsourcing this to the Russian or the Chinese to be able to take Americans into deep space. And I believe that we have to invest very strongly in the space program, and particularly here in Cape Canaveral at Kennedy Space Center. Is again, we have 23,000 people who are not only just highly educated and highly experienced and so forth. This is a national asset, and it correlates directly to our national security advantages. Now, what do we do about it? Because we've got a situation where the current current representative has not been a strong voice in figuring out how to protect either these jobs or get the right funding that we need here. Is first of all, again, back to why we need it, and we talked a little bit about that, but my expertise is solving those economic and budget problems, and as a result creating jobs and having the discussion with the major employers in the country that need to invest here in Central Florida. But when we think about why the Space Coast is important, and why not only just the space program, but human space flight, and we're a launch site here, but we're much more. We have science and life sciences laboratories that this country has invested in here in District 24, and those need to be strongly advocated for.
Absolutely. Very well said. Karen, you have been totally amazing. I thank you so very much. And I know you're out there on a camper trail, so I really do really appreciate it. I'm so humbled that you took the time to join us today. We always like to end our interviews with one thing, something that's very important. We interview women from all around the globe. We interview prime ministers and presidents and executives of Fortune 500 companies. One of the things I noticed very valuable that we hold near and dear is our jewels of wisdom. Please share your jewels of wisdom for other women who are looking for leadership roles, rather than politics, if it's nonprofit or private sector. What are your jewels of wisdom, the things you hold them most importantly, that get you going each and every day?
Oh, wow. That's a wonderful question. I think that what I would like to offer is that I have a very strong faith, and I think if you start the day very reflective on your values, your principles, and things that you're thankful for, which I try and start my day like that. And then my other maybe jewels of wisdom would be, it's always been my experience that with whom you work is more important than the work you do. And be the best that you can at what you're doing and surround yourself, which is what I attempt to do, with strong people, with good guidance, with values that are similar than yours, and back it up with some hard work. And at the end of the day, love the family and the people around you, and make sure that they know it every day.
Karen, that is absolutely amazing. Thank you so very much, Karen, for stopping by with us today. We really do appreciate it, and we're looking forward to your leadership, the continuity of your leadership, that is. Hopefully you will snag it as being our next Congresswoman from District 24, right here in Florida. Thank you so very much, Karen. Do you have anything you would like to add with us today?
You bet. My website is diebelforcongress.com. The election, early voting is now, but the election is August the 24th, and I would like to certainly ask for your support, ask for your vote, and we can return this seat to a conservative district, and very much would like to have your vote. And again, it's diebelforcongress.com, and it's Karen Diebel, or you can email me at karen@diebelforcongress.com, and thank you so much for having me on the show today.
Okay, Karen, thank you so very much. And for those of you who are listening now and those of you who are tuned to us later, Karen's website, once again, is diebelforcongress.com, and it's D-I-E-B-E-L for congress.com, or even go to karendiebel.com, and please join up, see if you can come out and help her. We do have a couple more days. You can still get out there, do precinct walk-in, post signs, tell your friends, email the website, do whatever you can to help Karen in this effort. We need more good women in Congress. As you noticed, Karen talked about managing a budget. Men never did, never will. Thank you so very much, Karen, for joining us. And thank you very much, listeners, for listening to us today for another amazing topic on the Silk Undressed Talk Radio Show. Now we will have with us another amazing woman that will be coming up with us today. Once again, this is the kickoff of Women in Politics, where we talk about the year of the Republican woman. 2010 has been just amazing. One of the things I've been advocating for is for women to just jump out, get ahead, and actually go forth and be the best they can be. Because once again, once a woman's dream is realized, the whole entire world changes. She can't change it by herself. One woman can change many things around her, but women, more than one, two, three, or four women together can change almost absolutely everything there is to change. So together, let's just forth and let's continue to support women, and let us not always be the woman behind. Behind every good man, they say, is a very good woman. Let's change the paradigm a little bit and have every good man that there is behind a very strong, integrous woman. Coming up next, we have another woman that I think is just absolutely amazing. Her name is Tina Calderon. Dr. Tina Calderon has done, right now she is a candidate for Seminole County Public Schools for the school board there on District 5. Tina Calderon has done many of things within the various different communities here in Seminole County. She's been an amazing leader, an amazing teacher, and she's just been one woman that has been on the heels of success as it relates to education. Education is near and dear to her heart. Children are very precious to her, and she likes the ingenuity of the excellence that's in education. And one of the things I found out about Tina is that as a business owner, she brought a lot of the business aspects to her efforts here in Seminole County, which really have to be applauded. Tina is, she has raised over $4 million for Seminole County Public Schools. Dr. Calderon Arthur is the former executive director of the Foundation for Seminole County Public Schools. She's a graduate of Leadership Seminole and past alumni president. She served as chairman of the school's advisory council, which is SAC here, and she actually did it for five different Seminole County Public Schools. She's a successful business leader in both small businesses and national corporations. She has served as a member of the Regional Chamber Education Committee. She has volunteered in Seminole County since 1994, and she has a doctorate in educational leadership from University of Florida. Once again, we're going back to our topic of the day, kicking off our Women in Politics, and it's the year of the Republican woman. And once again, we want to talk about the integrity in leadership. Once again, I cannot stress enough that in order to be successful in business, whether you work for a profit or a nonprofit organization, regardless if you're in a private or public sector, as a leader, integrity is one of your most important assets ever. In fact, it is the most important trait you can have as a leader. And the leadership must transmit a sense of honesty and integrity to each member of the organization and each constituent within their district. So without further ado, I am going to bring on a line a lady that I've grown affection for over the past couple of years. Not even really know who she is, just watching her work. Without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to Dr. Tina Calderon. Good afternoon, Dr. Calderon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Cece. Thank you so much for allowing me to come and speak with you and your friends today.
Oh, you are quite welcome. Like, I like to just jump right on in it. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're running for this amazing opportunity that you have right before you.
Okay, well, thanks. As you know, Cece, I think you've covered a lot of my past work experience, but if you get to know me as a human being, I think you'll know that I put faith and family first. And I think if that's the cornerstone of how all of our leaders in the community work, I think our world would be a much better place. I am honored to be married to my husband, Joseph, for over 20 years. He's a practicing dentist here locally. And I have two teenage children, one who is actually a graduate of Seminole County Public Schools, and my son, who is still active and a student at Lake Mary High School here locally. I truly feel that we must, as women and as leaders in the community, actually walk the walk and role model the best behavior that we can for the next generation and all of our coworkers that we work with currently. So I try to espouse that every day of my life by staying positive, by constantly giving back to the community, and making sure that our family and friends are taken care of.
Well, great. Thank you so very much for that, Tina. Now, you're running for District 5 in Seminole County. Now, that is a district-wide seat, and there's a lot of things on the table as it relates to education, and you know there's also a lot of challenges. Right now, let's talk about one of the challenges that I'm personally concerned about. I would have to say I'm really concerned, and that is class size. Let's talk about that.
Okay. So, well, I'm concerned
right now,
too, Cece.
So now, if you were a school board member, what would you do to make sure that the class size referendum that they have right now on the table, I'm not sure the status of it right now, but what would be your fix, Tina? What is the fix to this class size amendment?
Well, I must say, first of all, for any of our listeners who don't understand what the class size amendment is, back in the year 2002, the voters in the state of Florida had the opportunity to vote on an amendment that actually lowered our class sizes based on the grades in which the students were in, anywhere from the teens to the low 20s. And what we have found that, as with much legislation, the devil always lies in the details. In the amendment that we perhaps had voted on in 2002, it was supposed to have been funded by the state. What has happened, though, unfortunately, is the school districts are still tirelessly working to make sure that we are within the class size caps, but the funding is no longer coming from the state. So in November, the voters will again get to revisit this Amendment 8 and make a determination on whether they would like to, for lack of a better term, right-size this amendment. Rather than going on a class-by-class basis, let's say our cap is at 18, rather than having to have 18 students in every single class, if we happen to have a class, as you know, Cece, very well, Florida is a very fluid state. We have citizens moving in on a daily basis and moving out on a daily basis. And if a child comes in, that we would be required to hire another teacher, find another classroom, and break the wonderful momentum, perhaps, that the teachers currently had in their current classrooms. And I don't know about you, Cece, but some of these small children, they need that stability in their lives. And, you know, once they form that bond with the teacher, they don't want to have to change after a month. And we would have to be forced to do that. The right sizing of this amendment would actually take it on a grade-by-grade average, which I think is more workable for us to do. It will cost us millions of dollars to be able to institute it. And Seminole County, quite frankly, among the state of Florida, is probably one of the closest to making sure that we will be in compliance on the first day of school on August 16th. We are within one student in many cases.
You're kidding. Awesome. I tell you, I'm so impressed with Seminole County. Seminole County is very lean and mean. We understand what we're working with, and we just do it very well. And I'm
Absolutely.
Sure there will be continuity of that with you on the board. Let's talk about some of the legislation that we have at hand. We talked about the class size amendment. Thank you very much for talking about that. Now let's talk about some of the budget, education budget, the actual dollar that's spent on the child within the classroom. Now,
okay.
You have to excuse me because I'm not very versed on that, but definitely you are because you have your hand smacked in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us, how are we going to help that funding capability with the child in the classroom, and how do we just do better with our budgeting, or can we do better with what we're working with?
Well, I think I would bring a fresh set of eyes, Cece. I think you've known that I've been gainfully employed in business for over 30 years. So if nothing else, I'll bring a new set of eyes, different perspective, be able to ask those tough questions. I've learned a lot in managing my own business. I go out and renegotiate my contracts on an annual basis because I know the best thing I can do is deliver a quality product, but also want to have the ability to continue to do so without ever having to lay off staff. Seminole County Public Schools, as you may or may not know, we just had the FCAT data released to us within days, and we were actually ranked number 3 in the state as far as the highest test scores. And the other two counties that beat us out, the total amount of students in those counties weren't even as many students as we have in a high school. So as our board chair happened to state, she goes, as far as she's concerned, we're number 1 in the state as far as quality. But your question, getting back to it, was actually based on funding. And over the last school year, out of the 67 counties in the state of Florida, we ranked 55th in per student funding, which really I feel that as a school board member, I want to work together collaboratively with the state of Florida to make sure that we are getting our fair shake. We have proven time and time again, ever since they've given out the A-plus grade, Seminole County has indeed received an A-plus ranking. We want to make sure that we fight for every single student in our district. We cannot leave any child behind. Believe it or not, Cece, in our district, we have over 1,300 homeless students coming to our schools each day. And of all of the students that we have in our district, over 40% of them are on free and reduced lunch. Now, you can just make assumptions, if you will, with that, but that being said, these children need our help more now than ever before, and I want to make sure that I am their champion on the board.
Awesome. Let's talk about the Blueprint for Reform. That's the reauthorization of elementary and secondary education. That's that act. Have you had an opportunity to review that, and what do you think about that? Do you think that it's definitely the way to go in terms of planning and evaluating the policy of education?
Cece, I'm not real sure which blueprint you're talking about. If you could clarify that, I know there's a lot of new federal legislation coming down, a lot of state legislation, but nothing has been carved into stone yet, so I don't want to mislead any of your viewership today. So What specific would you like me to address for you?
The U.S. Department of Education came out with a blueprint in terms of how to make the educational system here in America to be the top there is in the world. It was a reformation that I think it was back earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
It talked about how we can make every child in America get and deserve of a world-class education. And they talked about some of the opportunities for us to modify our educational system to make sure that they're competitive and lead the nation in college completion, as well as just being more advanced in technology, medicine, and sciences.
Absolutely.
And so even without reviewing that, what do you think that we can continue to do here in Seminole County? Because I think that we're on the right path right now. But what can we continue to do to make sure that we don't lose any of those elements that we've already implemented in terms of making sure that children are competitive world across the nation and around the world?
Absolutely. What you're referring to, actually, Cece, we're still working on the details of that. We still don't know what our goals will be for national graduation rates and all those norms. But, you know, my passion has always been to make sure that every child that we have in our schools can become a productive citizen upon completion. And whether that means a child is going to go into vocational education or whether that child is going to get a PhD in engineering, we need to give them the best basis they can be to be able to be competitive in a global society. I'm very discouraged as a parent and as a taxpayer that we are only currently having our children in the country go to school 180 days a year. We are no longer an agricultural society. And for our children, my children personally, to compete in a global society against students from, let's say, Korea that are going to school many more days a year than ours, we're really putting them at a disadvantage. So I will fight tirelessly to make sure that we bring in all of the correct STEM classes. And when I talk about that, I mean the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. If you look even here in Central Florida, you'll see over at the Burnham Institute in the Lake Nona area, we are really giving opportunities for our future graduates to gainfully become employed and productive citizens. And that will only occur if we're giving them the tools and the education necessary. So I want to continue, as I have for decades, to be engaged in the community and in the business community. I hope to continue to serve on the board of directors of the Chamber of Commerce. I will continuously go to any educational endeavors that I can. I believe in lifelong learning, and you will always see me sitting at a table learning more about the research dollars that are coming into Central Florida. And I love partnering with the Economic Development Commission to make sure that we are on the cutting edge, to make sure that we are partnering with every single business here. So there is a lot of synergies that can grow from that.
Oh, absolutely, and very well said, Tina, because I think you're right. You're absolutely correct. I happen to be blessed enough to be from an area, New York City, that is international. And so you have people from all parts of the world, and each one share the same story of their surprise that their children go to school so little. So they're used to the kids going to school longer days and more days of the year. So they are looking for, and I think that will be very well embraced to have more hours in a day that our students are taught. Not only that, they should be going to school more than, I think they go to school now, six, maybe 4 to 5 months out of the year?
Right, 180 days out of the year. So it just depends.
Is that about 6 months, maybe?
Right. And,
right.
You know, initially when the United States created by national law a free public education for our citizens, it was based that the majority of our wage earners in this country was based on an agricultural society, and these students were needed at their family farms. Well, many people now don't have family farms, so these children could perhaps be in school and be engaged in a safe and productive and educational environment more days. But again, as you well know, Ms. Cole, you have been so involved within the policies and politics of this great land we live in. It's going to come down to funding, because if we are going to have our children in more days of school each year, that's more electricity, that's more teacher salary, that's more of a lot. And it's going to have to be a revolution from within. But I want to be able to be reflective of all the stakeholders and listen as you have. You know, I too come from New York, and I think that's what makes our country great, is that we do welcome people. And I like to say, in the corporate world, I like to take best practices from other places and build upon them. And if the one thing I have learned by getting my doctorate in educational leadership, it's I've become a data-driven person, and I love doing research, and I love looking at best practices, and then challenging your teammates to perhaps step up a notch to meet that higher bar, because it only makes the world a better place for all of us.
Absolutely. Now, one of the things that I talk about that I feel that we definitely need a greater push at, and that is having a little bit more control locally in terms of how do we manage our budget and how we allocate our spending. What would you do, Tina, as a member of that board, to help push that agenda to gain more control locally? So, because we know what it goes on here in Seminole County, it may not be comparable or the same that goes on in Broward County, for instance. How do we have each county stand on their own ability?
Well, I think you know my personality well, and I don't ever back down, and I have a lot of energy, and I want to use those energies in positive ways to effectively communicate and collaborate with all of our elected officials to make sure that they truly understand, by certain monetary or other decisions that are being made, how it's affecting the lives back home of the students' eyes that I'm going to be looking into every single day, of the teachers when I listen to their pleas and their needs of what they know from a profession is needed for a quality education. As you well know, almost 30% of our budget is in categorical funding. So that is things that we here locally cannot touch. But the majority of our funding obviously comes from the state of Florida. And so often, a lot of the amendments, we happened to speak about one earlier, the class size amendment, in concept sounds good. Just like this past year, there was a lot of discussion on Senate Bill 6. But the devil, again, lies in the details when it's another unfunded mandate. And I hope to collect the data and communicate it on a person-to-person basis and all of our stakeholders so they can understand it as well, to understand that how these decisions really are affecting lives. It's not just a line item in the budget. You know, and speaking of budgets, you know, being in business for so many years, I understand budgets, and I challenge every single line item in every single budget I have ever managed on a daily basis. I mean, we have to constantly go back and reconfirm that our dollars are being spent in the best way possible. These are tough economic times for our citizens right now, and it's not the time to put a higher burden on them. But my passion always has been and always will be education, and I think you either pay for education or incarceration, and education's a whole lot cheaper. So if we are being good stewards of our government dollars, it should be well spent within education.
Absolutely. Very eloquently said, and you're absolutely correct. Now, I know that we've been facing some economical challenges here in Seminole County, and that impacts our schools, our students, our teachers, and our budget as well. And I know that we've been doing a great job over the past couple of years to making those, you know, those adjustments to absorb our losses. What would be your take on that, Tina? What can we continue to do to make sure that it's not a further burden, not only just on our school systems, but our budget as well? Because that's very important.
Right. Well, as you know, with any financial stability plan, whether it's in your home budget or whether it's in your office budget or whether it's in a government budget, you look at both sides of the equation. You can either generate revenue or lessen the expenses. And I'm here to challenge that perhaps we look at doing both. When you look at perhaps different income opportunities, not taxing, but income, perhaps we can look at a fee-for-service adjustment on our before and after school care. I've heard walking the streets in the neighborhoods that, you know, parents, the two working parents, they're willing to pay a premium to know that their children are taken care of and are safe, and that might be a service we could offer. Additionally, food service. I want to make sure that, you know, we are holding the line and, you know, making the correct income and fundraising from that. I would like to challenge us to look more into the recycling programs and some rebates for energy. I've talked to a lot of construction companies, and there are a lot of national grants that we could get out there that we could get rewarded for, and we shouldn't leave that money on the table as well. We might want to look at what other school districts have done around the country, whether it means advertising on the roofs of schools. As you well know, we have a flight pattern of airlines going over many of our schools to put logos on the roofs. It's not going to take anything away from the educational process, but it might bring some income in, and or the buses, and sponsorships, naming rights, and I definitely want to look more closely at some grants that we might be able to fill some budget gaps with. In my work in the nonprofit field, I had the opportunity to write many grants, and with a school district of this size and some of the creative new ideas that we could perhaps implement, I think there could be some wonderful funding sources out there for us. As you know, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is actually partnered with another county here in the state of Florida to the tunes of multi-millions of dollars, and that might be something we could look at as well. When I look at the other part of the balance sheet, you want to look at lowering cost. Some of the things, my suggestions would be, as you know, in the state of Florida, there is a state mandate that we must purchase textbooks each 5 years. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm sure algebra is still taught the same way it was when you and I took the class as when our children are taking it now. So I'm not so sure that is the best use of our investment dollars. I would like to challenge us to perhaps get an exemption from the state of Florida to bypass that policy and maybe even get Kindles for our children. A, it would be a lot lighter in the backpack, so we're not having the aching backs all the time. B, it would be a lower cost. And C, it would afford our teachers the opportunity to utilize other technologies. These are the technologies our children are going to use in the workforce. We might as well start planning now. I'd also look at some outside efficiency audits. I'd also want to make sure that we're utilizing technology to automate as much as we can. Want to go line item through line item in that budget and make sure we're saving our taxpayers' dollars every pay period that we can, perhaps even looking at furloughs for some of our management staff. I know some of my friends who work at Fortune 10 companies, when they've gone out to their employee base and said, give us ideas, what can we do other than laying off? What can we do? And you'll know the quality of life in America sometimes outweighs other things. And for people to be able to have some time to spend with an ill family member or a graduating child or longer weekends to be able to reconnect with their soul, that might be worth more to them than a pay raise or things of that nature. I'd also like to look in our busing area. I'd like to look at some consultants. I think we have phenomenal people on staff that maybe could perhaps do our own consulting for us in-house in many of those areas. So I'm sorry to be so long-winded, but as you can tell, Cece, I'm passionate about taking care of our students and our budgetary dollars. So those are just some of my ideas. I could go on all day.
Well, you know what? Don't apologize for your passion, because I am hearing exactly what I've been wanting to hear this whole campaign season. You have articulated a well-thought-out plan that's completely relevant. It's not a bullet point plan, and if it is, each bullet point has some clear, concise details as it relates directly to not only the students here in Seminole County, but the students are behind them. So it's almost like a project for today, tomorrow, and the future. Which is really great. I really do commend you for that. I really do applaud you for being really passionate and not really running for school board to sit on the board because it's the fashionable thing to do, but because you really do care, because you really are a leader in education and you understand what it takes to be competitive in this global environment that we live. You understand the budgeted, you know, challenges that we face right now. And you have a plan to actually offset that. You're right, and that's by incorporating other elements that we already have here at our disposal that we're just not using. These are untapped resources that you just explained, which is really great because you just articulated my thoughts. So thank you so very much. And it's really great, and I'm glad that you're long-winded. I'm glad that you have a well-thought-out plan, and I hope you much, success for during this campaign season. I know we only have a couple more days to go. And
we
so I know that you're
it's
out there
exciting.
Working hard.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And
but,
I know you're
you know,
out there working hard.
So,
oh, absolutely. So go ahead and tell us what we can do to help you achieve the goals that you would like to achieve by becoming the next school board member for District 5.
Oh, well, obviously, as you well know, the most important thing is for everybody to get out to exercise their vote. I would be honored to earn every single vote in Seminole County. Even though it is a District 5 race, it is a nonpartisan race, and it is a county-wide race. So that means every registered voter within Seminole County has the ability to vote for this school board race, and I would be honored to earn any vote that is out there. There is early voting going on currently at 5 different locations around the county, at 4 libraries and the Supervisor of Elections Office, 7 days a week up until the 22nd of August. And then, of course, Election Day is on August 24th. So at any of your precinct pollings, hopefully our voters will go out there and vote.
Okay, and give us your website and tell us how we can tell our listeners and those who are listening to us now and those who will catch up to us later where they can find you and how they can get involved. Regardless if you live in the state of Florida or not, there's still effective communications regardless of where you live.
Absolutely. Regardless of where you live, we are, as you and I have both said today during the show, a global society. And I would welcome any type of input from people of best case practices that they've experienced. And people can communicate to me very easily. My website is www.voteforTina.com. So it's VoteForTina.com. You can reach me that way through email. Any type of communication, I'm constantly wearing my email on my belt, so I hope to respond as soon as possible. But as you well know, in campaign season, I've been out there at the polls 7 days a week waving to our constituents and walking the halls of our schools, making sure that we're prepared for school to start on August 16th, and obviously being a business leader, going to chamber meetings and rotary meetings and things of the such. But I would be honored to have any sort of support that the community can give us, because it's a very small world that we live in, and there's nothing more important than our children and making sure that they are well educated.
Absolutely. And Tina, one of the things we like to do, our signature, is close in with your jewels of wisdom. Please share with our listeners and our readers your jewels of wisdom that you can lend to the next woman who's looking to do exactly what you're doing, to be a leader in the community, to be a leader in education.
Oh, that's a great question. I wish I had prepared something. I'm a very humble person. As you know, I just received the Women of Distinction Award from the Girl Scouts for being a leader in education and helping shape the lives of women and children, and I was just so humbled by that. And I guess I'm humbled by the question here from you today, Cece, to think that I could actually impart my knowledge and help shape lives. But I guess the way that I live my life each day is to be true to myself. And I think if you're always true to yourself, you never have to think twice on any decision that you make. You find your passion from within. I share this with my children each and every day. Find a passion, because if you find that passion, it's not work. And it gives you energy, and it makes you feel so good. I can't tell you the times through this campaign that tears have been brought to my eyes by people coming up and saying thank you, or as people pulling out of the polling precinct today, honking their horn, putting their thumbs up and saying, we voted for you, go for it, you can do it. You know, you don't ask for those kind of accolades, but it's just enough to keep you going. And I feel that if anybody out there can get involved in their community and give back, it always comes back tenfold. So I never look at anything I do about giving. I look at everything I do about living the most honest, humble life that I can, and it will always come back to you in spades. Every time that I'm working with children and tutoring them or mentoring them, I know I get more out of the experience than they do. At the end of the day, it's a powerful thing to know that you can help someone else.
That is amazing. Very well said. Tina, thank you so very much for taking time out of your busy day to stop by and to share your jewels of wisdom, your plan for the success of Seminole County Public Schools. I really do appreciate it. Thank you so very much, and I wish you all the success and good luck on the campaign trail. Thank you very much,
Ms. Cole, thank you so much for the opportunity. I really, really enjoyed myself. You had some very thoughtful, intriguing questions, and I wish you continued success.
Great. Thank you so very much.
Bye-bye now.
Enjoy your day. Well, thank you very much for joining us once again on another amazing show of the Silk Undressed Talk Radio Show. This is our season where we'll be kicking off for the next couple of weeks on Women in Politics, the Success and Integrity of a Woman will take us forward. Thank you. Until next time, good day.